You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Howdy, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. Actually, it's episode 444, which is really only a few digits away from 666, which would make this a really cool episode number for the countdown to Halloween. But we're not quite at 666 yet. They give us another few years, and maybe we'll get there. My name is Mike Gordon, and I will be the host of the show tonight. Director Faber is up north in New York City, of all places, having a toast of the town. He's taking a bite of the Big Apple. He's making it there so he can make it anywhere. So he's got some wheeling and dealing that he's doing. Big things are happening. So he's up in New York. So I'm down here continuing to celebrate the month of October, counting down to Halloween. We've got a good show for you. Great show, actually. We are going to spotlight the career of the visually fantastic Guillermo del Toro, who is now the Academy Award-winning director. So it's going to be very fun to talk all about him. We've got a great crew to talk about that. Some guests joining us, some people that haven't been on the show for a little while. I do want to say on the outset, I do apologize. We tried to clean it up as much as possible, but the audio was, we did have some problems with Skype. There was some interference. And we tried to clean it up. So I do apologize in advance for some of the audio quality during that segment. That's what happens when, you know, Director Faber leaves I'm in charge of all the audio recording. So this is why we have Mike Faber. I do believe the episode is fun. It's a great discussion, and our guests were very patient with some of the technical difficulties we had. So I hope you will be too. We really appreciate you joining us, and we really appreciate you joining us and supporting us through our Patreon page. The ESO Network has a Patreon account, and we would love for you to help support us and participate in it. Heck, even if you just share it with other people and let other people know about it, we really would appreciate it. It is a way that you can help us a lot, because running a podcast network is a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and takes a little bit of cash. So at some point, you know, if you decide to grace us with some funds, we will grace you with bonus material. And nearly all of the network shows have been participating in bonus material, so you're going to get some great stuff, some past panels at Dragon Con. Heck, the Dragon Con gathering of the ESO Network folks just went up last week. That's fun to listen to. If you have your own homemade jar of pie to enjoy while drinking it, I think you'll enjoy listening to it even more. And by the time this airs, there will be a special series that we're doing exclusively to our patrons. For those of people who listen to a lot of our movie reviews, Ashley Pauls, who does our movie reviews on the ESO Network blog, she's actually started a series called Better Late Than Never, which is her sort of watching movies. She's watching movies that she has not ever seen, and that some people have recommended, some things that people have told her or society has told her that she should watch at some point. And in some cases, that society and that person was me. So she's decided, since it's kind of a lull time during for theater watching, for going to the theaters, and she's not really into horror movies, and this is usually a month for horror movies to come out, she's decided to view some of the classics, so to speak. So she started the series last week with a blog post about a movie that she had never seen before, the classic 1977 Jaws. So after she released her blog post, I reached out to her and we recorded a conversation about Jaws that we are airing as to our exclusive content to our patrons. So, and we will be continuing to do that as she watches classic movies that she's never seen before, so we can discuss them in a little bit more detail and get her reactions to watching these movies that she's heard so much about, that have such a reputation, and she's finally getting a chance to see what all the fuss is about, see if they live up to the hype, so to speak. So, and Ashley's a fun, she's fun to talk to, she's engaging, she knows her movies, so I definitely encourage people to check out the Better Late Than Never. And we will be, like I said, issuing the first episode of that this week. Like I said, it should be available to patrons by the time that this episode comes out, so that you're listening to it now. So if you go to a Patreon page, you can donate and get full access to listen to that as well, as much other content. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it. So all you need to do, again, is go to Patreon.com/ESO Network, and we really appreciate it. We do want to hear from you. We love hearing from our listeners. Please feel free to write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com, or you can call and leave us a message, 404-963-9057. You can also participate in our Facebook group. We have a lot of fun there. So we want you part of the discussion. The people that are joining us actually in this episode came to us because we got to know them because of the interaction that we had in social media. So please participate in social media, and we would love to have you join us as well. If not on the show, certainly to continue the discussion that we start with the show into blog posts and various discussions online. We love that stuff. But before we get to our main topic this year, and we're going to take a little break from counting down to Halloween, talk about something a little less spooky, but a little bit more nerve-wracking, just as nerve-wracking for some folks. And that is the nominations for the 2019 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That has been announced, and so we will be talking about that in just after this break.
Hey, it's Sean from the Soul Forge podcast. Join me and the gang as we guide you through the adventures of living. Topics include sex, loss, joy, and stupid things we've done for love. It's life, the universe, and everything. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the ESO Network, SoulForgePodcast.com, and everywhere else you find podcasts. The Soul Forge Podcast. Let's find out together.
And now we're going to talk all about the 2019 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, or possible inductees, those nominees for next year's induction anyway. And with us is our iconic rock expert, Michelle Berg.
Hi.
Howdy, Michelle.
Hi there.
And welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yes, yes. This is something you've been waiting for quite some time.
Yes.
So let's get started. We've got 15 nominees, and that's usual the case now, right? 15?
Well, we're down from 19 the past 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's less than last year.
Yeah, more concise ballot this year.
Okay, so we've got 15 nominees, and how many of these 15 are going to get in? We don't know for sure, but we're guessing around 5?
The hall is indicate Joel Parisman, the CEO of the foundation, and they're the folks that put people in. He says their goal is 5. If they kind of fudge it, if the votes are closed, or if they decide to fudge it and put somebody in as musical excellence, there's a possibility for 6, but generally the goal is 5.
Okay, so we've got 5 out of the 15. So a third of these folks have a pretty good chance of getting in. And, of course, you can vote for them at rockhall.org. And the nominees, without further ado, I'm going to read them all off here, and then we can talk a little bit more detail about certain ones, if you like. We're going to start off with The Cure. That's first time?
Second time.
Second time for The Cure. Def Leppard, Devo, Janet Jackson, Kraftwerk, LL Cool J, MC5, Stevie Nicks, solo. Now, she's already in as a member of Fleetwood Mac, but this is for her solo career. John Prine, Radiohead, Rage Against the Machine, Roxy Music. That's a first for them, isn't
yes.
it? Okay, Roxy Music, Todd Rundgren. I think you're very familiar with kind of familiar
I've
with
heard of Todd, yes.
Yes, yes. I think we both have some experience with Todd. Rufus and Chaka Khan. Now, this is kind of interesting because she's been nominated with Rufus and without Rufus at various times,
yeah,
right?
This is the third time with Rufus, I think, maybe at least twice for her solo. They keep trying.
And finishing out the ballot, again, it seems like they're on here a lot, is The Zombies, which are kind of appropriate for this month of October as well. So very cool. So if you want to look at, for those people who are looking for a tie-in, what does this have to do with Countdown to Halloween? There you go, right there. The Zombies are nominated. So, some of these others are kind of scary that they're either not in already or are getting in. So where do you want to start, Michelle? Like, should we start with people who you think may get in or?
As of right now, who I think will get in.
Okay, so the five that you're predicting off the bat have a pretty good chance of getting in.
Def Leppard, who will win the fan vote. I think they're up by 20,000 votes right now.
And this is their first time on the ballot?
Yes.
Okay, so Def Leppard, first time on the ballot. We're thinking they're going right in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stevie.
Stevie Nicks is, as we said before, she's already got the ring. She's already got a Hall of Fame ring. But as a solo artist, you think she has a pretty good chance. I will say that right off the bat, I don't have a knack against Stevie getting in. Although I am bummed not to see Pat Benatar on this list. For me, it starts and ends with her now. I don't think any other women should get in before her. Not to say that these women that are on this list are not deserving, and no other women are deserving, but once again, Pat Benatar is not on this list, and I'm scratching my head as to why. I know that when we went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and they had that list of people that you could vote for, she's pretty high up there as far as the popular vote of people who they want to see in the Hall of Fame. And it's I'm scratching my head as to why she's not in. But that's not a knock against Stevie Nicks. Again, I think she's deserving. Her solo career is pretty strong.
It's strong, but her really, her masterpiece work is with Fleetwood Mac. I think we're stretching it a little bit to say her solo career is hall worthy. And I love Fleetwood Mac. I love Stevie. I'm not going to be upset if she gets in, but I agree with you. There are so many other deserving, exciting female acts. There's Pat, there's Cindy, there's the Go-Go's. A lot of people thought that we'd see the Go-Go's this year. Alan Light, who's on the committee, said that the seven female members of the nominating committee, that's 7 out of 30, kind of pulled their resources and pushed for Stevie, which it's kind of sad that We kind of feel like, oh, we have to pick one woman to put on this ballot that we think would have a good shot. I mean, we don't do that for male artists. We have to try to field one female we think will do well. And, of course, Janet coming back. This ballot is good. It steps away from the classic rock mold that it's been in for a couple of years, but it's very short on female artists, very short on R&B and artists of color. And my other big disappointment is that there's no Judas Priest. Again, the Hall snubs metal.
Right. And yes, for those people who are thinking Def Leppard is metal, it's
no.
not. If you ask someone who's really into metal, they will say no. All right. So, as far as some of the other folks on the list, okay, we said, so you think it, you're, so despite the fact that Def Leppard's not metal, they're more of a popular vote. You know, I could definitely see the case for, certainly if you're including bands like you did last year and featuring like Bon Jovi getting in, Def Leppard's right in that same kind of wave where, yes, they were very popular. Some of their songs are classics of all time. You know, you could say that they're one of the few bands still around that can, you know, that have filled stadiums before. So they are, I would say, worthy of this. Yeah. So whether you're excited about them or not, you know, and they're still around, but right. I think they're still performing.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So they're still around. And so we have Def Leppard and Stevie Nicks. Now they're going head to head, or at least they were for a little while in the fan vote. Seems like you're, like you said, Def Leppard is kind of going forward more than anybody else.
They've pulled ahead by yes. a significant margin.
Gotcha. All right. So we've got Def Leppard. We got Stevie Nicks. You think getting in, who else?
I think the Zombies. I think fourth time is the charm. I think.
So the Zombies are finally getting in.
I think Roxy Music.
Interesting. Now this.
Some people think they might be too British and a little too obscure for the American, largely American voting body. But Brian Eno is included on the personnel list. I think they have a good shot.
Well, I've always heard about Roxy Music that if you're going to look at 80s, especially British pop music like Duran Duran and Culture Club and whatnot, you kind of have to start with Roxy Music.
Yes, you do.
So it's almost like they are, if you let in Roxy Music, you're opening the door for some of those other bands to get in, and that door is going to remain shut until Roxy Music gets in. Sort of, they're the linchpin there. So that's going to be interesting to see. So Roxy Music first time getting it right in too.
Yeah.
Skip ahead. All right. Mm-hmm. And who else?
My last one is Janet. She is really having a moment. Numerous awards, big tour. The nominating committee would really like to see her get in. I think she will, but not quite as strongly as I think Def Leppard and Stevie will get in. I have seen a lot of people say Todd Rundgren has a good shot. I always thought Warren Zevon would be nominated before Todd, so I am pleasantly surprised by the nomination and how well he's doing in the fan vote. He's respected in the industry. He's butted heads with some people in the industry, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But right now, my fifth slot goes to Janet.
I know a lot of people are very pleased to see Devo on the list. Mm-hmm. It should be pointed out that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is located in Cleveland, Ohio, and Devo has a lot of strong ties to Ohio. And but it would be kind of interesting. I don't see them getting in when the induction ceremony is in New York. Like, it seems to me that if they were going to get in, they should be in the induction ceremony in Cleveland.
Yeah.
So you know, as petty as that sounds, that's a legit reason that sometimes they vote for people. Like, the induction ceremony this year is in New York City, so they want to make sure they sell tickets out. Yeah. So I would imagine that they are going to be looking at bands like Def Leppard, like Janet Jackson, like Stevie Nicks, to get in, because that's going to be exciting for a New York crowd. Mm-hmm. LL Cool J might even be among those, you know, that might be kind of cool. I know that two bands that you haven't mentioned that are more modern, Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine, this is not their first time at the dance here. And they've had some success, and a lot of times, especially with Radiohead last year, people thought they were a shoe-in. But because, I don't know if it was because of their attitude, not wanting to care about being in the Hall of Fame or not, or certainly participate in the induction ceremony, if that really hurt them. But they're here; they are back nominated. So, do you think that Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine, either separately, there's some wave against them, or do you think they stand a pretty good chance of eventually getting in, but just not this year?
Almost assured they will get in, but I'm not sure about this year. Radiohead could kind of be the wild card. This ballot, stepping away from classic rock, it's kind of a bellwether ballot for the Hall. They have always put forth that it's induction by your peers, that the living inductees are the ones that have the most ballots on the official, in the official vote, so they have most of the say. The problem that the Hall has had is that what that tends to do is you replicate your voting base over and over. Basically, older white guys. There's a whole bunch of older white guys that made it big before the 80s and 90s, and they tend to vote for stuff that they know. Now, the nominating committee has given them less, maybe a little less than they know compared to years past. So we'll see if the Hall is able to start stepping into the future and away from the classic rock with this ballot.
Well, it should be pointed out that last year, two black women did get in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So that was a pretty good big step in that direction.
However, both of those black women are no longer with us and therefore are not part of the voting body. So,
well, that's true. Yes. That's yes. They don't get to vote. They don't have proxy votes for people who are no longer, do they?
No.
Okay. So no. That doesn't get bestowed upon anybody, your state or anything.
Yeah. So what happened is you inducted Bon Jovi. So you've got 5, 6 older white guys, and they're going to turn around this year and vote for.
Right. So
Death
you've got,
Leopard.
You've got Moody Blues, Dire Straits, The Cars,
yeah,
and Bon Jovi, who are all a bunch of white dudes that have votes.
Yeah.
They got votes this year. So yeah, that'll be really interesting to see where their votes go.
Yes.
And as far as classic music goes, classic rock, you're right. This ballot doesn't seem to have a lot of that. You'd have to kind of default to maybe that's why the Zombies get in this year, because they're one of the only classic rock bands that are on here. You've got certainly some popular ones, and then you've got, you know, these bands like Devo, Roxy Music, and The Cure that represent the first, or like opening the door to different styles of rock music. You know, Devo, of course, is opening that door. Devo and Kraftwerk could work against each other, I would think, a little bit. And then, you know, you've got bands like MC5, which just kind of are there on the ballot, and Chaka Khan, which is like, they've just kind of always there on the ballot. You've got these people, yeah, you've got these bands or these acts, MC5, Chaka Khan, and the Zombies, that are kind of been on the ballot all this time, and it's kind of like, which one of those do you finally just go, all right, just get in?
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. Well, very cool. Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, it's fun to look at this. It's fun to vote. We definitely encourage people to go to rockhall.com and vote for their favorites and who they want to get in. I think you can vote once a day. Is that right?
Once a day per email address. And it goes through early December. I apologize. I've forgotten the exact ending date. I think it's December 8th or 9th. And then about a week after that, they'll announce the class. And the induction will be March 29th in Brooklyn.
Very cool. So we definitely encourage you to vote. Now, does your vote, we here at the Earth Station One podcast always believe that your vote matters, no matter what it's for, right? Especially this month or in November. We really want, you know, people to go and participate in voting. And I don't want to say that it doesn't matter here. It is really, like, when you put it up against, like, the top, um, the, the top vote getter of the fan vote works out to be sort of equal to one member ballot.
The top five in the fan vote get an extra credit vote counted against all the others.
Right. But it does send a message, I think, to the Rock Hall as far as where the interest is. And it's something that they look at. I mean, they don't just, even at the, when you go to the Hall of Fame, when they have you, sort of put in your nominees for who you'd like to see to get in, this is data that they use. This is not something that they just ignore. So it is kind of important if you want to get your voice out there. And certainly if there's one that you feel passionate about, then get the word out and make sure that your voice is heard and that your performer has get them to. I mean, if nothing else, we found that it's really cool. Like a lot of the artists, some even that you would think that wouldn't care, really do sort of appreciate the effort that the fans put in, mm-hmm. and the idea that they're nominated. So yes. Certainly like bands that play it like too cool, like Radiohead, they maybe not, but some of the other acts that you would think, oh well, it doesn't matter to them, that does matter.
Yes.
So so it's really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. So we will obviously keep tabs of that. And we will have, Michelle, you'll be back with your Iconic Rock segment next week, as usual, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And I know that you've skipped a few because we've done our countdown to Halloween here. So you'll be back on schedule, I think, starting next week.
Yes.
So that'll be awesome to have those back. And you'll keep us posted as to how the nominees are doing.
Yep. I should be back in December and we'll talk about The Class.
Right. Awesome. And if you guys out there, if you have any nominees that you think that you feel strongly about, feel free to let us know. If there's acts that you think are still, it's still criminal that they are not being nominated and not, or that they're being ignored by the Rock Hall, let us know that too, because it's always interesting to have that information. So, thanks, Michelle, for joining us. And we'll be right back. And after this, we're going to go right into our countdown to Halloween segment.
Hey, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We're starting to get closer to late fall holiday movie season, where some of the bigger, more exciting blockbusters will be coming out, but we're not quite there yet, although we do have a couple movies to talk about in theaters this weekend. First, we have Johnny English Strikes Again, which stars Rowan Atkinson, who is returning as bumbling secret agent Johnny English. After a cyber attack reveals the identity of Britain's undercover agents. As a side note, I kind of feel like I've seen this plot in a spy movie before, but anyway, guess who gets called out of retirement to deal with the problem? That's right, it's Johnny English back in action. This one's not getting super great reviews so far. Critics are saying that it's kind of goofy, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but maybe it's not really working here. And the franchise is feeling a little tired at this point, which is a shame because I do think Rowan Atkinson is really funny and I enjoy his style of comedy. But sounds like we all may be better off just watching Mr. Bean episodes at home. At the theater, we also have a movie called Hunter Killer, which is also not getting great reviews. It's about a submarine captain played by Gerard Butler who responds to a distress call and discovers a secret Russian coup. This eventually involves a group of Navy SEALs rescuing the kidnapped Russian president and stopping World War III. This one really seems more like a Cold War era type movie to me, and especially with kind of all the stuff going on politically right now, it seems like a weird time to release this movie, but it is what it is, and I don't expect we'll see a lot of it in terms of box office take this weekend. On DVD, we have the musical Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, if you're looking for something lighter and fun. And then we also have Sorry to Bother You, a movie that was getting great reviews. I heard a lot of buzz about it earlier this year. Critics called it ambitious, funny, original, and is an alternate version of Oakland that deals with some real-world issues through the story of a telemarketer. And that's it for this week's Box Office Buzz. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, I'm actually starting a new blog series over on the ESO podcast website called Better Late Than Never. I'm actually going back and watching some classic or iconic films that I've always wanted to see but have just never got around to watching. So last week, I went back and watched Jaws for the very first time and really enjoyed it. And this week, I'm tackling North by Northwest, my very first Alfred Hitchcock film. Super excited to write about it and to see what other people thought about the movie as well. So if you've seen North by Northwest, be sure to keep an eye on the ESO Network's Facebook page and join in the conversation. I'd love to hear your thoughts about Alfred Hitchcock and the movie overall. Scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul and seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder. Howdy, everyone. Welcome back. And now it's time to tackle the main topic of our Countdown to Halloween episodes. And this week we are spotlighting artist extraordinaire Guillermo del Toro. And to do that, we have two guests. It's been way too long since both of them were on the station, actually individually. First, Allison A.R. Cook, author extraordinaire, is joining us.
Hello, how's everyone doing?
Howdy. Welcome back to the station. I think actually this is the first time you've actually seen the interior of the station, because I think we recorded with you on our mobile, like we were at a convention or something, I believe, right?
Yes, I remember it was the Century Center, so it must have been either, I can't remember, there's a couple of cons there, so yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Well, we will get caught up with you a little bit later, but thanks for joining us. And we've also got with us artist Steve McGinnis.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Steve, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, it's been way too long, sir.
I know. We gotta catch up.
So let me ask you first, before we get into talking about Del Toro, how is the Halloween season treating you both? Allison, we'll start with you.
This is my favorite time of year. You know, I made it my mission this past weekend to get a pumpkin, because that's all I ever want to do every year is make sure I get my pumpkin. And hopefully, maybe I'll get over to Netherworld, because I've got a couple family members who say they want to go, and I usually can't find people to go with me. So hopefully we can do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, in the Atlanta area, actually in probably the Southeast, that's like the Netherworld is like a big, big tradition.
Yes, it's a big one, and I've never been. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Neither have I, but then again, I'm not big into haunts, but I can't take it. I'll admit it.
Well, I think I'm ready this year. I'm usually not either, but I've been like training myself this year. I've been watching like YouTube videos of haunts and mazes. I think I'm ready this time.
Okay. We'll see. That'll be interesting to report back. Steve, we'll what see. About you? You've got the family all ready for geared up for the big day?
Actually, yeah, I took the little guy over tonight. We're making a V for Vendetta costume for him.
Oh, wow. And how old is he?
Yeah, 13 now.
13. Okay, that's a pretty good age for that.
Yeah, so he loves V. And yeah, we went to Pumpkin Patch last weekend, picked out the pumpkins. I got the electric Dremels ready. We're going to start carving, I think, this week. And yeah, we're ready to go.
And I must say, I definitely encourage people to follow you on both Instagram and Facebook and whatnot, because some of the pieces that you've been working on, I particularly love the interpretations you've been doing of the serial monsters.
Oh, thanks. They are a blast. They are so much fun to do.
All right. So to get started, let's talk about your first exposure to Guillermo del Toro. What was the first project of his that really caught your interest, Allison?
Well, I remember what it was, even though at the time I didn't realize it was him. It was Hellboy 2, and I saw it in theaters. I had actually been with a bunch of friends. We had gone to a sci-fi convention, and the hotel we were staying at was next to a movie theater. So they said, everyone said, let's go see Hellboy 2. I'm like, what is Hellboy? I didn't even know what Hellboy was at the time. What is that? It's like, oh, a demon is someone from hell, but he's a good guy and he helps the good guys. And I said, oh, this kind of sounds like Spawn. I don't know if I'm going to get into this. But I just remember being really blown away just because it wasn't the kind of superhero movie I was expecting. It was the second one in particular is kind of like a superhero fairy tale, which I love dark fairy tales and I love that kind of look. So that movie really stuck with me. I didn't expect it to. And so then when like Pan's Labyrinth came out, I absolutely fell in love with it and I recognized the kind of art style right away. And oh, I just love that movie so much. So I'm glad I saw, and then I went back and saw Hellboy 1, but Hellboy 2 was like my first exposure. So.
Yeah, I think the Hellboy movies were a lot of people's first exposure. Steve, what about you? Yeah.
I think the first one I saw of his was Mimic.
Okay.
And I remember the transformation. Like, remember when I guess they were cockroaches, the giant cockroaches, and the one would, in particular, would transform, and it had that exoskeleton that would kind of close together and make it look like a human face. And I remember saying, wow, that is just out of bounds when I saw that. And after that, it was like Hellboy, Hellboy 2, same thing. Hellboy 2 was, yeah, Hellboy and Hellboy 2, just especially part 2, the creature creations, like when they went to the Goblin Market, that was unbelievable. And same thing with me. My wife and I saw Pan's Labyrinth. That was just wow. Like the faun and all of the fairies and the that crazy, I forget his name, the thin man or something with the eyeballs in the hands. That was nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is a creative genius. Like,
yeah,
he's unbelievable.
Definitely got this visual style that is unlike anything. I mean, there's traces of a lot of familiar styles to it, but he's really made it his own, I think.
I'm trying to
remember. I think I know I saw Mimic, but I didn't see Mimic in the theater. So I get a little fuzzy on the exact order of these, but I do remember seeing Mimic. I do remember renting Kronos, which is, I believe, his first feature-length film. And I do remember being kind of creeped out by that. I'm a huge Blade fan from the comics. So
I liked
the first Blade movie, but Blade 2 blew me away.
That was nuts, eh? The way that jawbone opened?
Yes, the vampires, his version of vampires in that was unlike anything I'd seen before.
Same here. And that the fellow who played the lead vampire in that, the bad guy, was the elf in Hellboy 2.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even think of it. Wow.
Yeah.
He does like to use a lot of the same actors. He does, especially, I think, like Ron Perlman's in just about everything he does.
Really?
Yeah. Ron Perlman, he was in Kronos, Blade 2. Of course, he's in the Hellboy movies.
That's right.
And I think he shows up in Pacific Rim.
That's right.
So, yeah, he's used him a lot.
Yeah, if you can get Ron Perlman, why wouldn't you use Ron Perlman?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this was before, and this was like kind of, I think, a time, right? I think Ron Perlman was coming off of doing the TV show, Beauty and the Beast, when he did Kronos. If I've got my timeline right. And
I think that was like 97 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was like one is his way in. Usually I find that actors kind of find their way in from TV. They make that jump from TV to movies and horror movies. So it seemed like maybe that's what he was doing there. But you look at Ron Perlman too, and he just, especially if you've seen a lot of Guillermo del Toro movies, he just seems like a perfect actor to live in that world that he creates.
He does.
Right. I mean, he's just, like I said, just you recognize his face even underneath all that makeup. It's just kind of perfect for, yeah, the look of what del Toro goes for. You're right.
Yeah. Of course, Blade 2, even it was a, I think it was really weirdly received. I know some people who love it and some people who hate it just because it was such a visually a departure from the first Blade movie. And I think that a lot of people were expecting more of the same, but I really liked it a lot and very disappointed in Blade 3, of course. And I think I think almost everybody can agree on that. Yeah. But Del Toro didn't have anything to do with that. He was, by that time, moved on to the Hellboy movies. And I think a lot of people can agree that he really was the perfect director to bring that comic property to life.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that artwork. And, I mean, not to deviate too much from Del Toro, but the artist also did the Disney Atlantis movie. And I just thought it was so cool that they incorporated that art style into that movie. So, yeah, I love his artwork.
Yeah, now, were you familiar with Hellboy before, Steve?
Yeah, I used to love the comics.
Mm-hmm. And you must have been a little bit worried, like a lot of us, when it was going to be made into a movie, like, ooh, who can carry this off?
Well, yeah, like, because Hellboy, you know, especially the way they drew him with this, he kind of was like all upper body, like he was
right,
all great big giant guy, little legs, giant club. I was wondering how it was going to translate.
The Hellboy movies were really well done. The first one was great. The second one, I think, visually was amazing. I don't know if the story was as strong, but I could have wanted more, actually, Hellboy movies. I wish they'd continued.
Well, they are making, it's going to be a different director, but I think there's a new one coming out next year.
Yes. Yeah, they are. Yeah. They're kind of restarting the franchise with a new actor and a new creative team. So,
yeah, but it's the guy from the sheriff from Stranger Things.
Yes.
Is Hellboy now.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So, but I will say that, you know, I think Guillermo set the tone, and that's going to be a hard, like, who's it, the people who are making the new one have a lot to live up to, not only just the comic, but those first two movies visually.
Yes, definitely.
And I don't know, is that the first time he worked with Doug Jones? No, he worked with Doug Jones at Mimic, it says here, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was one I couldn't remember.
Because Mimic had a lot of, like, really creepy, lanky transformation characters. And, yeah, I could totally see Doug working in that.
Right, which I've heard. My friends that I used to, that actually saw Hellboy 2 with, they met Doug Jones at a convention and just said he's the coolest guy ever. That they could just hang out with him all day and that he loves hanging out with his fans. And, like, the other celebrities that were there were kind of crusty and, like, yeah, yeah, whatever. But Doug Jones was just awesome. And of course, nobody else like recognized him because it was him and not in makeup. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, he can walk down the street without anybody knowing him because he's most of the parts that he's played is for creatures.
Exactly. I like hearing that, though. Like, it's awesome to meet people that you idolize and they're actually cool people.
I get the impression Guillermo himself is the interviews that I've seen with him. The people that have met him say he's just a big fanboy.
Really?
Yeah, that he just loves, like, he loves this stuff. He loves comics, he loves movies, he loves music, he loves, like, literature, and he just tries to bring, like, all his loves together and every project that he does. And I think that shows. I mean, for better or for worse, I think most of the movies that he makes seem like labor of love.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a unique, you know, it's so not mainstream that you feel the passion behind it, that it's so unique. And in fact, I think I read somewhere that because he wanted Pan's Labyrinth to be in Spanish, the studio was offering him twice the money to do it in English. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. I want this to be authentic. It takes place in Spain. I'll take half the pay to have this done in Spanish.
You know what? I always forget that it's done in Spanish. It's been a while since I've seen that one, but yeah, I forget that it's not English.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. There's not, well, first of all, it's translated. So I believe Del Toro did the translation himself because, like past translators, he didn't like what they had done. So he translated the film. But yeah, it's so seamless that, yeah, you forget that you were reading the subtitles.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I totally forgot that.
When I think of the movie, I think of the visuals first.
Yes.
So I think that's why I'm not, I don't even, you know, boy, that makes it even more interesting, because if you're reading subtitles, that's a challenge with all those visuals to distract you. Mm-hmm.
Right, competing, like, where should I be looking? I should be looking at the beautiful visuals, not at the... And I think he picked the right moments for there to be dialogue and for there to be no dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, like the pale man scene, the guy with the eyes in his hands, there's almost no dialogue in that scene, and good thing there isn't, because you wouldn't be reading any of that dialogue.
That scene. Was terrifying, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's a good point, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to spotlight him and his work during the month of October, because yes, he makes visually beautiful movies, but there's an element of creepiness to all of them that he's able to get under your skin visually, like very few people are filmmakers and creators are today.
Oh, definitely.
Yes. In fact, I was reading a little bit of trivia about Pan's Labyrinth. Is at one of the screenings, Stephen King came and sat next to Del Toro. And during the Pale Man scene, he said Stephen King was squirming in his seat. And Del Toro said that was better than any Oscar I could have ever won. Just that moment right there.
That's awesome.
Well, you go figure. He won himself an Oscar. And that's another reason why I wanted to spotlight him this year as well, because he actually, not too many folks who make the kind of movies that he does are nominated, let alone walk away. But I think The Shape of Water is a very unique and different movie in and of itself, which we have discussed a few times on this show. But man, it's an achievement unlike any other. I, as much as I love the rest of his work, Shape of Water is a brilliant piece of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Not great. I know my husband and I were, like, after it won the Best Picture award, he's going, why did that win Best Picture? It's a weird fish film. And it's like, well, it's beautiful. Did you see it? It's beautiful.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought, yeah, truly, it's, you know what, if he stopped making films, that is his masterpiece, for sure.
Yeah. I think I've heard of how he's going to follow it, but it's amazing to think that he has to follow it.
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
Although I would think after Pan's Labyrinth, that would be the same thing. Like, I mean, he would go, like, after Pan's Labyrinth, he did Hellboy 2, so it was kind of, he could go into a safe sort of, you know, licensed property.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful to think. I would love to get to a point someday where every project I did, I could say that I would be happy if that was my swan song. You know,
that would be awesome.
That would be.
Steve, are there other moments of Del Toro's movie making that stand out in particular for you?
I gotta say, well, Shape in the Water, that was just absolutely beautifully shot. The story, everything. But I gotta say, Pan's. I got the movements of the fawn, that story, it was incredibly dark. That one, it left you with a great big, like, hole in your gut at the end, eh? I'd say that one sticks out of my mind the most.
In addition to it being Spanish language, I would imagine the ending probably made executives a little nervous too.
Exactly. Like, such a non-Hollywood ending. I actually have to get rolling here. My little guy is just about to go to bed.
All right. Well, yes. Well, we thank you so much for joining us. And before you leave, where can people find your work?
You can find me at Steve McGinnis Horror Illustration or Steve McGinnis Illustration on Instagram.
Awesome. And we will have links to both of those in our show notes so that people can check out your stuff.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely, and we'll make sure that we have you back too.
That was awesome.
It was nice meeting you, Steve.
It was very nice meeting you. Have a great night.
You Thanks. Too.
Happy Halloween.
Okay. Happy Halloween, guys.
You too. Bye-bye.
what other have you seen? Are you familiar with all of these movies, or are there some that you haven't seen?
Oh, there's a bunch. I'm gonna have to, because it's Halloween, I'm gonna have to sit down and do a Del Toro marathon. And part of it, and I know it's funny to say I love Pan's Labyrinth, but say like I've been nervous to sit down and watch Crimson Peak and Devil's Backbone. It's like those, and Pan's Labyrinth was scary. Why am I afraid of like sitting down watching any of the others? So I guess part of it is I don't want to watch those movies alone. So I just have to convince my husband to watch them with
me.
But
that's the fun of it, isn't it?
I'm like I said, I've been training myself to go to Netherworld. So that tells you how much of a wimp I am for horror stuff.
I will say I watched Crimson Peak last weekend because I wanted to sort of – I realized that was the hole in my viewing of his movies. So I watched that one, and it is epic. It is a very good story. I don't think it's his best, but visually, I mean, it oozes gothic romance and I don't want to,
right.
Just all this, like it's really heavy with gothicness, if you will.
Yes, which I love. And I also love how most of his projects, so many of them are period pieces, which I love too. I love the fact that he picks middle of the 20th century or late 19th century. I mean, I love that he's loves that time period, the turn of the century.
Yeah. And most of his work, especially I will say his work, like that he does, that comes from him, not like Blade or Hellboy or whatnot. But if you look at Kronos and Crimson Peak and Pan's Labyrinth, Shape of Water, they're very fantasy heavy as well as horror. And I wouldn't say, I think the most science fiction movie that he's done is Pacific Rim.
Right, which I keep forgetting he did that one. And I know this one, another one I have to sit down and watch because I first saw the trailer and went, oh, like Transformers meets Kaiju. I didn't know if I liked it. No, it's Del Toro. You got to watch it. So that's another one on my list.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's a lot different for him. I mean, it's much more of an action, you know, fun rock'em sock'em robot kind of romp with big, huge Guillermo del Toro creatures.
Right. In fact, one that I found out he worked on, at least he's produced, is actually for kids. It's called Troll Hunters.
I've heard of it, but I've not seen it. And it is a animated series, correct?
Yes, it's actually one of what's going to be three animated series he's working on for Netflix. I think the second one just came out called Three Below, I think is what it's called. But yeah, you can see a little bit, like if I didn't know Del Toro worked on it, I may have not guessed, but you can see the flavor of his art style in some of the troll characters in Troll Hunters. And very different. Like it's a very interesting cartoon for kids.
I would imagine if he has something to do with it, I would imagine there's a little bit of, yeah, like this isn't your normal kids show.
Definitely not. I haven't watched the whole series, but I know it's kids protecting trolls from trolls. And it's a whole troll world and society. And Clancy Brown is the voice of the bad guy. So you always got to love that when he's voicing the bad guy. And it's a really, and it's called, it's like unusually colorful for a Del Toro show. So it's an interesting mix of his fantasy and a kid's show.
I would imagine that, you know, for a while, I think he had similar battles with studios as a lot of unique creators do, where they have a little bit of trouble making it their vision because the studios are kind of nervous about something being too stylized. But hopefully now that he's got an Academy Award behind him, and I think Shape of Water was a pretty good hit, that he'll have a little bit more leeway when it comes to, you know, the projects, a little bit more trust from studios. Like, okay, we don't understand what you're doing, but we know what you're doing sells, so that's good enough for us.
Right. In fact, the two projects I'm really excited about to see how he does them and how he brings his unique art spin to it. He's doing Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark. Which was, I don't know if you ever, did you ever read the children's book, Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark?
I don't think I'm familiar with that.
Well, they're actually quite old. I think they came out in the 70s or 80s, but they just had bizarre artwork. So they just stayed around. They're kind of like Goosebumps. But they're just, and I assume this will be either an anthology movie or a series, but the artwork in that was so gothic and so unusual. And I could kind of see it translate into Del Toro's style. So I'm very excited about that. I hope he does it justice. And then he's also doing a stop motion Pinocchio.
I have seen some artwork on that, and that looks amazing.
Well, first of all, I'm a huge animation fan, so right. Anything animated gets me excited. Stop motion in particular. Like, all my favorite movies are stop motion. So to know that he's picking that style for this, I'm wigging out. I want to see it already.
Yeah, I'm a big fan in particular, and listeners will probably know this, but I'm a big fan in particular of the work that Laika does.
Yes.
And I can only imagine that, he's got a similar sort of style, or he brings something similar to the table in his stories. They come from, he is Mexican. And so he brings a uniqueness to these visions that I think an American audience just really can get a lot out of.
Right. Well, and he helped produce the Book of Life. I believe he was connected to that. And I think he had a major influence on that movie. And that was a beautiful movie too.
Yes. And I do know that there was, he was, I guess when they, after they finished the Lord of the Rings movies, Peter Jackson was like, I'm done. And the studio was like, we really want you to do The Hobbit. And he said, I'm done. But you know what would be nice would be Guillermo del Toro. And so Guillermo del Toro worked on the Hobbit film series for quite some time until, now, I don't know what the official word is. I do understand from some sources that I'd rather not quote directly, but I do understand that his visions for The Hobbit were a little let's just say it was too stylized, and it wasn't going to fit with what Peter Jackson had established, the style that he had established.
Right.
And B, it was going to... not really, it was going to adapt the original book in a way that I think the Tolkien estate was not comfortable with.
It's one of those things, like, it's a shame. I would have loved to have seen what the product would have been if it had been a purely Del Toro Hobbit.
Yes.
It would have just been awesome. And maybe someday, like down the line, like, you want to redo the Hobbit yourself? Yeah.
I think he's moved on from that, but he probably is not going to look back, but it would have been interesting. It would have been very different though. Like I definitely think that it would, if the studio wanted something that matched the existing Lord of the Rings series, then yeah, Del Toro is not your guy. Cause if you want something by like, that's a style of somebody else, you don't get Guillermo del Toro. I mean, he's going to be the guy, he's going to do it in his style.
Exactly. And it's like, if you hire Del Toro, why wouldn't you have him do it in the style, in his own unique way? It's, which happens sometimes. You get directors and then they're made to do it in a way. Like, I love Tim Burton so much. But the Alice in Wonderland movies, I went, what happened? other than Disney giving him a huge budget, and maybe he works better with a smaller budget. Like, this is not Tim Burton stuff, not the stuff I fell in love with. So yeah, I don't understand why sometimes they hire directors to do things and then don't let them do it in their style. It's beyond me.
Yeah, no, it's like they legitimately want to have their cake and eat it too. And yeah, that causes conflict. One of my favorite directors of all time is Terry Gilliam. And he... Very much like Guillermo del Toro, he has his own style, his own unique style of way of telling stories that's not like anybody else, and yet it's very difficult to I mean, the studios don't know what to do with it. They're just like, we don't this is too much like you. We want it to appeal to a mass audience, not just to like you.
Right, to like a niche people. Yeah, I know. I love Terry Gilliam too, and kind of breaks my heart when you think about it. He's got all these projects and is having like trouble getting the funding sometimes just because he is so different and out there, and got to support art directors who have unique visions.
I think so. And that's one of the reasons why, I mean, I really there was a lot like Tim Burton and another director I kind of put in this lump too. He directed the Addams Family movies, Barry Sonnenfeld, I think. They're very visual. Like they bring something visual to the table and they're very good at that. But I think when it comes to story, that's where the ball gets dropped a little bit in characters. Now, each of them has had a limited success, and Tim Burton, I think, is kind of a coin flip, right? You don't know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get something visually interesting, but as far as story and characters, sometimes you're going to get like a Edward Scissorhands or an Ed Wood, you know, and other times you're going to get a Planet of the Apes or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Right, which of course is why I argue he needs to be given less budget, because it seems like every time he gets a huge budget, that's where it kind of explodes all over the place. It's like his smaller budgeted things, he has to be creative and figure out how to make it work. So like just smaller budgets. Let's just give him
definitely think no matter the budget, when you see a Del Toro movie, it shows. He uses every little bit of it. And I think he's really good at being creatively infectious, meaning the cast and crew completely buy into everything that he's doing so that they give a little bit more. You just get a feeling when you're watching these movies that the crew, everybody working on it, wanted to help bring this vision to life and maybe work a little bit extra, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you can just, I don't know how else to put it, that you can feel it. Watching a movie, you can feel everyone's passion and involvement. And of course, I applaud the fact that he continues to use practical effects rather than CGI for everything. I think that's my biggest pet peeve with movies nowadays, is I know it's cheaper and it's faster, but I love practical effects and the makeup and the costumes. I mean, my favorite character from any of the movies probably is the Harpy from Hellboy 2. That's just a gorgeous look. It's scary. It's creepy, but it's a gorgeous looking character. I don't know how they operated that costume, but it's just, that's probably the biggest high point in that movie for me was the heartbeat.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'd almost forgotten about that one. That's and so many of those characters, and some of them were expertly brought to life from the comics. And then when he's let loose to do his own thing, then we get these visual creatures that are in Pan's Labyrinth and Pacific Rim even. I mean, those big, huge monsters from another dimension just look like something that someone in our dimension could not possibly conceive. And yet there he is working on these.
Right. And that one, I understand the need to use CGI. I understand it's a little hard to do practical effects on that one.
Yeah.
So the instances where he does have to use computer generated film, he does a good job. It just doesn't feel as authentic as his practical effects for me.
Well, like I said, the effects are the one thing, the vision are the other, but I'm very impressed by his sense of story. He spends his sense of characters, bringing us characters that we care about within these worlds. And, you know, even though he's primarily known as a filmmaker, director, he's also got co-authorship to his credit with the Strain novels. He's done a lot of work, I mean, scripting of his own movies, as far as from a fantasy author perspective, where does he rank as far as his storytelling, based on his, just like plots, characters, that kind of thing?
Oh, for me personally?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. I mean, he's definitely in the top four. Because, I mean, I love fantasy. I think it's because he is so niche. It's almost in a category of its own. You know, I love Neil Gaiman, and I love, I kind of got into fantasy because of the Dragonlance series. So he's definitely in the top, well, especially because also that is, I've seen more of his screen work. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of in a category of his own in terms of all the fantasy writers that I love.
He definitely does. It would have been, like you said, it would have been interesting to see his take on The Hobbit, because that would have been sort of pure fantasy, whereas most of his works are a dark fantasy.
Right. That's why I'm eager to see, say, what happens with Pinocchio or Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark. Yeah. Especially because we consider both of those to be children's properties.
Yeah, but
anybody who's read the original, feeling they won't be.
Yeah, anybody who's read the original Pinocchio book, it is nasty. I mean, it is dark.
Oh yeah,
and it is like if he goes to town on it, it's like you're not going to want your kids to see it. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to make it, because it's really like even the Disney movie. There's elements that freak me out.
Oh yeah, everyone was scarred by the donkey transformation scene.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody.
Yes.
And that was such a small, like, and I know the original story. In fact, I read somewhere that the original story, when the author was writing it, he ended it with Pinocchio being hanged. Like, he gets hanged from the tree and the editors say, "You got to keep writing. You can't end it there." That's horrific. He's like, "Fine, I'll keep writing." And then you get the rest of the story and the happy ending that he originally wasn't going to include. But again, the editors and the publishers like, no, you can't end it that way. So we'll see. We'll see if we get a happy ending in the Del Toro version or not.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting watch, because I would imagine that he'll be under pressure to do, you know, to kind of give it. And you know, if he stays true to the book, there it is there. So, but yeah, the visuals, like I said, that I've seen so far, I think he's taken a page from, or one of the illustrators, Chris Grimley is his name, and he's a very fantastic illustrator. I know he's been doing some work for the character design, as well as Guy Davis, who is a comic book artist. And so that's going to be, I mean, oof, that's some dark stuff right there.
Yeah, I'm excited. Can't wait to see this.
Yes, absolutely. And I think he's actually, like, this isn't one that he's just slapping his name on. He's actually directing this one, I believe.
Right. Well, directing, and I think at least writing, adapting some of it, I believe. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is his next project. And yeah, I mean, I think to follow Shape of Water with Pinocchio is a bold move. But Shape of Water, like I said, is such a unique thing. I know it kind of, when I first saw it, I thought it was, you know, a cross between, I thought it was going to be a cross between the Creature of the Black Lagoon remake and Abe Sapien from Hellboy, right?
Right. And that was my first thought.
Yeah, I thought, oh, is this an Abe Sapien movie? Like, he's breaking out and doing his own movie. And certainly there's a lot of influence from both of those in that movie.
Right. And of course, it's Doug Jones again as a fishman.
Yes. Yes. And it's a shame that despite the makeup and everything, he'll never get the nod for, like, best anything, right? Like,
yeah, definitely a special category for best actor you don't recognize under all that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then Doug would it would either go to Doug Jones or what's the other guy's name I'm trying to think of, the one that does all the Peter Jackson movies.
Andy Serkis?
Yes. So they would be the two that would get it every year. Like, it would just alternate between the two of them. That's funny.
We need to establish this category.
Yes. But, well, I think we've run out about time for this, but, and it's a shame that Steve had to leave so early, but,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you to sort of, end this part of the topic. What would you say if somebody out there hasn't ever seen a Guillermo del Toro movie, or, you know, for those people who are uninitiated, or even those who might be semi-familiar with him, where would you, like, what do they need to see?
Well, once again, it depends on the age and also what genre one likes, but definitely Pan's Labyrinth. Just be prepared to cry. That's all I can say. Yeah, if you obviously if you love
invest
superheroes,
invest in a nightlight.
Yes, absolutely. And don't go digging around the roots of trees, and you know, stay away from all that. Let's say if people like the superhero stuff. I mean, they'll enjoy Hellboy and Blade. If you want something a little bit more light, Book of Life. You can start in so many places. It just really depends if you love the fantasy more, if you love the horror more, sci-fi more. You're so all over the place, it's hard to know where to start.
Yeah, I think that's why I think like his masterpiece is Shape of Water. It mixes in so many things that he's done in his career into one nice package. And it's just... Yeah. It's an amazing piece of work, and I'm so glad that he was not only nominated but actually rewarded with the Academy Award. Sometimes they don't get it right, but
right,
but they got it right this time. So
yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the perfect year for him to get that award, and also the perfect time now to pursue any of the projects that other studios may say, "Oh, that's kind of weird. We want to stay away from that." It's like, hey, he just won the Academy Award. He can do whatever he wants right now. He's gold.
Yeah, you would think. I don't know if it's quite that easy, but it should be.
So, well, at least it's a bargaining chip to say he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
You know, it's a little odd, but he knows what he's doing and it works.
Absolutely. And we love him for it. So, Allison, thank you so much for joining us for this topic.
Yes, thank you for having me. I always love talking to you and being on ESO, and I'd love to come back again if you ever need me.
Absolutely, absolutely. But first, we'll be right back after the ESO Network Con Report.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you can do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
And now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report. Man, it's just so weird doing this without Mike. But I am pressuring on. So, yes, we've only got a couple events happening throughout the rest of the year where you can find ESO Network folks at. And one of them is December 3rd on Saturday. That is in Charlotte, Carolina. It is the Charlotte's Geek Gala. It is the 10th anniversary of the Geek Gala in Charlotte. This year's theme is Gears and Ghouls. So it's going to be a little bit steampunky and a little Sugar Skull. It's going to be a little bit Day of the Dead. It's going to be a fantastic time at Noah's event venue. And if you're going to the Geek Gala, you'll want to stop by and at some point say hi to the Nerd Bliss folks, because they will be there as well. So say howdy to Nerd Bliss and get your geek on at the Geek Gala on November 3rd. And then the next event that we've got coming up is December 16th. It's the one-day show, Atlanta Comic Convention, here in the Atlanta area at the Marriott Century Center. So that's always a fantastic day of getting cool back issues, looking for that for your Christmas gifts or holiday gifts, if you will. And you can also see a lot of creators there too. There's a lot of local creators that show up there, and so you can get specialized gifts for your friends and family as well. So take advantage of that. It is, again, December 16th. Mike and I will be there. We won't have a table or anything, but a lot of friends of the show will be there as well. They'll have tables. They'll be milling about. It's usually a fun time. And who knows? We might go to Fellini's and have some pizza afterwards. That sounds like a perfect day for me. So that's coming up. Other than that, we don't really have much else. This is kind of the slow season. We're getting in the slow season for conventions. There certainly are quite a number of them out there, though. So if you have a convention that you want us to promote, or you've got an upcoming convention that you want us to help participate in, 2019 is coming up fast, and Mike and I are getting our convention schedules ready. So there's a lot of them that we've been asked to participate in, which we always love doing with panels and whatnot. Or live recordings. We love doing that too. So if you are interested in having us participate, or you just want to come on promote your 2019 shows, let us know. We will add you to our schedule. We'll get you on the show so you can talk all about it, because we love talking about conventions. And that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our guest first and foremost. He's no longer here in the station. He had to beam down. But Steve McGinnis, we really appreciate your time and joining us for our main topic tonight. And Allison, welcome back to the station. We're glad to have you back as well.
I was glad to be back. I can come back anytime.
Oh, we would love to have you. So, well, it's time for shout outs. So what have you got to shout out about? What's going on with you?
Well, if you are in the Atlanta area and you want to come out to Conjuration, which is going to be November 16th through 18th, I believe that's going to be at the Hilton Airport. I will be there and I would love to see you. If you're interested in reading some other books about monsters and some stories that have actually been a little bit inspired by Del Toro's work, I'm on Amazon. I do the Scholar and the Sphinx series and the Scale Seeker series. So if you love fantasy, those would be great picks for you. I hope everyone has a great Halloween. This is the best time of the year. So do lots of trick-or-treating. And thank you again for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I definitely encourage people to check out your books. We will have the links in our show notes, of course. My shout out this week, I've got two. I'm going to have one from me, which is I want to give a big, big, big shout out to, we had a couple weeks ago our guests of this on the station when we talked about spotlighting Ash Williams. Our guests were Nicole and Ryan, and in the past couple weeks, I think it was last weekend, they actually got engaged. So there you go. So come on the Earth Station One podcast. You never know what's going to happen. Love is in the air, even in Halloween season. But very, very happy to both Ryan and Nicole. And we wish them nothing but haunted bliss, if I may say that, this time of year. And I also want to give a shout out. This will be on behalf of Director Faber of the ESO Network. Of course, we have to give a big shout out to fellow podcasters, the Cigar Nerds, which recently celebrated their 100th episode. So check out their 100th episode. And they were smoking cigars in celebration, but then they smoke cigars every week. So I guess it wasn't any different than any other episode. But, thanks for listening to us. We always appreciate it. Join us next week as we'll be doing our final episode of our countdown to Halloween. This is, because October will be over. So we are going to go back to our book club selection, and we are going to look at the classic H.G. Wells, The War of the Worlds. It's going to be a fun time. And feedback on this episode is always welcome at EarthStation1 at ESONetwork.com. EarthStation1 is available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever fine podcasts are found. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends, neighbors, coworkers, everybody, subscribe to the show. While you're there, please rate us and leave us feedback. That's how others can find us and get the word of Earth Station One out to the masses. Thanks for listening. As always, it's my pleasure, and we'll talk to you next week here on the Earth Station One podcast.
You've been listening to the Earth Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.